Start your day off on the right foot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
Welcome to the morning show on WRCO Radio. We're here to talk about a couple of things going on in the community. In fact, we're here to talk about the electric utilities here in Richland Center, a big customer appreciation coming up. Later on, we'll talk about Fire Prevention Week, which is next week already. So those subjects on the morning show. A little bit later on, we'll talk homecoming, too, in Richland Center, homecoming activities going on. And one of the outstanding alumni will be in the studio with us a little bit later. Irv Peckham is coming by. So we have a busy morning show today. We begin with Scott Gauld, who is the manager of the utilities, electric utilities here in Richland Center. Jim Schwingel is here as well from WPPI Energy. But this part of the show, Scott, you're wearing your utilities hat, aren't you?
I got the utility hat on right now, yes.
So let's talk a little bit about some subjects in the city. How are things going?
Things are going good. Within the utility has appointed me as utility manager. So from my electric superintendent role now, pretty much over the utility as far as wastewater, water, office. So with the events over the summer, the last few months, between the two entities, this position was created, and things are going really well with the city and the utility.
That was, again, in the news a little bit here in Richland Center, a little bit, but things, you know, it looks like maybe for communication purposes, your role, that's kind of what your role is then, right?
That is correct. Yep.
And moving forward then, has anything changed in terms of how you approach things then?
Lots of new things for me, and obviously the electric department still tied closely with that. But yeah, just looking at efficiencies, different ways to do things, and we're all learning. We've had some staffing changes, and we're just all learning. So it's going really well.
Good. We had a little power surge the other day. That's probably, that's a rarity, though, isn't it?
It is a rarity. You know, overall, our reliability, we are recognized RP3 through the APPA, a national award, and our reliability overall, we're in the top 2% in the United States for our size of utility. So the way our substations and our wildlife, our squirrels, and the way it blinks everybody, we continue to work with our engineers to get those relays loosened up to where not everybody has to be affected like they do. But it's amazing how much damage and chaos just a squirrel does on the pole.
There's really no control for that, is there?
What we've done is we identify those poles that have more than one contact with squirrels, and we continue to put wildlife guard as much as we can on the poles. But, you know, we have over 2,000 poles in town, so we wrap, obviously, the high-volume squirrel incident ones, and then, you know, we address it that way. We do our best.
It was a pretty good year in terms of avoiding storms, wasn't it?
We were very fortunate here. I think it goes back to the guys and the tree trimming that we do, the effort with the parks and the city of removing a lot of the ash borer trees. Unfortunately, a lot of trees had to go away, but that has helped our system overall. And we annually take care of all of our backyards and our right-of-ways as far as tree trimming. And knock on wood, we were pretty good. We avoided most of the storms.
Sure. And sometimes it's not even a storm. It's just like a gust of wind. All of a sudden you look out and
And you can cut trees back and cut the branches back, but there could be a dead tree that's 40, 50 foot back that, you know, falls and hits the line and takes the outage. So all you can do is do your best.
And we pray for a good winter this year, too, don't we?
We do. We do.
So, but you've taken some strides in that regard, too, you know, in terms of, you know, the water and everything else, too.
Yeah. Right? You know, continue with the street projects, with the main breaks. You know, they're way down. I think Steve from the water department, I think they had 4 last year, you know, and years ago they used to have 30. So that's why or how those street projects are part of the equation of how they're identified and where we go to try to eliminate those breaks. And most of those projects, you know, have potentially maybe 10 or 15 breaks in those lines or streets that we're replacing.
The project, North, what is it, 8th Street?
8th Street.
8th Street. I know that was a hardship for the people that lived in that area, but I think it's going to pay big dividends now when we aren't going to have water main breaks when it's 30 below, right?
For sure. And I think, the storm runoff, the improvements they put there, because there was some torrential downpours this summer, and that street was a river coming off the hill. So the storm that they put in, I think, is going to be a big improvement for that area.
Good. Jim Schwingle is here as well. Good to see you again, Jim.
Good morning, Phil.
How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. So you're back in the studio. We were here a year ago talking about WPPI Energy and some of the things, but it's a customer appreciation celebration coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Each year, the first full week of October, we have, based on our American Public Power Association, they set the dates, and it's Public Power Week. Celebration. So City Utilities is a public power utility, one of about 2,000 in the United States. And what that means is City Utilities is owned by their community. They're owned by Richland Center, the City of Richland Center, and the residents of Richland Center. And we want to promote the utility and let the people know that we're here for them. City Utilities, like all the other public power utilities, are not for profit. I just would like to say and make sure people understand that a typical business goal for a utility or any other kind of business is profit. But since we're community owned, it really isn't. I mean, what we're looking for is customer satisfaction, and we do surveys and we find out what are important to people, businesses and things like that. We work to be trustworthy, provided reliable energy, which you and Scott were just talking about, and work hard to keep costs affordable. The cost thing is kind of funny because when you do a survey and you say, how are we doing on costs? And everybody's like, it's typically really low rated. And I think it would be the same whether it was $100 or $50. People are going to say, well, I would like it to be lower. What we don't do a good job of is explaining how we are trying to keep costs low. And, some of those things that I'd like to just share today are, we have multiple different sources of energy. WPPI Energy has wind energy. We have nuclear, solar, coal, gas, and we also buy out of the market. And any one of those different power sources, we don't have more than 10% of our overall load in. So when we do have a problem and things do happen, it doesn't affect us in a tremendous way because in reality, those costs are passed on to our member utilities. Richland Center is one of 51 that are part of WPPI Energy and actually own us. That's one way of keeping power costs low. We're just working at that all the time. And one example I would like to share is I'll try not to get too complicated, but we buy capacity, and capacity means the ability to get the power when you need it. So power is kilowatts, and power times time is energy, kilowatt hours. So capacity is power or kilowatts. So we put out an RFP, a request for proposal, just earlier this year, because our members are summer peaking, meaning we set the demand peak in the summer, and for obvious reasons, because it's hot. That's our true measure of demand is temperature, so cooling, whether it's air conditioning or refrigeration. And we put out this RFP and to other utilities to say, hey, we need some summer capacity. What are the offers out there? And we got a really interesting one that we ended up getting, and it's with Manitoba Hydro. And the interesting thing about them is they're winter peaking. So we're actually able to trade 100 megawatts of summer peaking with them. So we gain 100 megawatts in the summer and they gain it in the winter, and there's really no cost. So those are the kind of things that we're doing, on a constant basis to try to save money.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. I never thought about that, the winter peak and the summer peak and how you can... Manitoba needs it for a harsh winter then?
Right, yeah. Right, for the heating reasons, and we need it more for the cooling.
Yeah. Scott, did you want to add to that?
No, I just, the the understanding of WPPI, I think, and that's where we get our wholesale power, and it's just amazing. I attend their meetings and how complex it is. When we've talked before about when we turn the light switch on, nobody really understands what goes into that. When, you know, we talk about the ATC and the renewables and, you know, everything's out in Iowa, Minnesota, the Dakotas, and if we get rid of a coal plant, what that means as far as megawatts or power available and how we need to, you know, create that highway to get that power of renewables back to us. It's just, to me, it's fascinating on how all that works. And when we're talking about hydro in Manitoba, that's feeding us and WPPI and the MISO market, it's just, it's very interesting.
Yeah, because that's a long ways from Richland Center.
Yeah, it is. So that the hard part was to get the transmission rights from, you know, from Canada to Wisconsin. But it did happen, and that is, you know, going to be part of our power portfolio.
Where does the bulk of the power come from? Is it coal or is it hydro? Or
to be prepared for that question.
Oh, you did? Okay. It varies. Yeah,
it does. It does. So overall, in 2023, our fuel mix was about 33% coal, about 22% natural gas, 20% nuclear, and then renewables, meaning, you know, wind, hydro, and solar, about 24%. So that's where it was. Now, you know, it's constantly changing because, you know, coal plants are being closed or they're being switched to natural gas, which is a much less carbon-emitting source. So in, you know, we have our own emission goals. You know, the goal is for WPPI, which is the same for all the bigger utilities in Wisconsin, is to be carbon-free by 2050. I mean, that's a goal. Do we know how we're going to do it yet? No, we don't know. We're hoping on technology changes and, you know, battery storage to improve and things like that. But just to give you an idea, since 2005 to 2023, our power supply emissions have dropped 45%. So from 2005 to 23, and that's mostly based on, you know, adding the renewables and subtracting mostly coal.
A big fear, I think, too, is just having a lengthy blackout, so to speak. What are there some steps that you take, preventative, you know, to avoid those emergencies?
Yeah, so Scott mentioned MISO. That's the Mid-Continent Independent Systems Operators, and they kind of run the power grid from Louisiana to Canada in the Midwest area. You know, there's some exceptions, but overall. And they're the ones who decide which power plants run when. And keep in mind that, you know, it's just like highways. There's congestion on the transmission lines, so you can't just, you know, crank up the power plant in Ohio to help northern Wisconsin. So they're constantly deciding which power plants run and, you know, which don't need to, or what power supply comes from where. I guess I'll get a little bit off the subject. So when we talk about renewable energy, Scott mentioned, you know, Iowa and Minnesota and the Dakotas, those are great wind states, right? I mean, we've got some wind turbines in southwest Wisconsin, but those states are really excellent for wind, you know, just because there's not as many trees and hills, right? Better steady wind. But the problem is they don't have huge populations out there to utilize that energy. So that's why there's such a big push to build these big transmission lines to take that energy from those states and, you know, to where it needs to be. So getting back to, you know, the blackouts and the planning, there's definitely constant planning going on about, you know, natural disasters or even cybersecurity, trying to avoid that issue. What would happen if there was a true outage? We never want the grid to just go down because it would be really hard to bring it back up. I'm talking weeks. So what would happen is, and right down to city utilities has a plan too, if they are required to reduce, you know, our first step is to, we've got some customers that are able to reduce their power consumption. And we would ask them to do that. In fact, they're required, they're under contract, and it helps them as well. That would be the first step. You know, beyond that, it would probably go to a public appeal to ask, you know, hey, can you please save energy? If it got bad enough, you know, you hear the word brownout, there isn't really such a thing. It's a blackout. And if it got bad enough, the utilities would be required to shut down circuits. And we wouldn't, you know, we would try and do it on a strategic basis, and it wouldn't just be shut one off and leave it off. You know, it would be kind of rotating. But in reality, we can't let the grid go down. So that's what we would do, is if it got terrible, you know. We don't expect that, and we plan, we do a lot of planning to avoid that. But that's what would happen in, you know, a worst-case scenario.
Lots of things are more efficient than they used to be as well. You know, do we use as much power, electricity, as we used to?
You know, there used to be a regular steady growth in electrical usage, and then it dropped way off because of those things you mentioned, efficiency and conserving energy. You know, lighting, everybody has heard of LED bulbs. They're way more efficient than what, you know, in the past. But it's not just that. It can be heat pumps and furnaces and, you know, overall HVAC, refrigeration overall. We are starting to see a little bit of a bump in growth, not so much in rural Wisconsin, but in other places, because of electrification. And when I say electrification, I mean replacing things that didn't used to use electricity with that. And that can be, like I said, heat pumps for not just cooling. You know, a heat pump is your refrigerator, but you can kind of switch that backwards and make it heat an area for like your house.
Mm-hmm. I guess one thing that, again, attending WPPI meetings and things and learning in different conferences, the other thing that stands out to me is AI, right? It's a huge thing that we're getting into. And one fact, and I think I'm saying this right, when we do a Google search, it takes one unit of energy. When you do an AI search, it takes 10 units of energy. So there, Microsoft in Southeast Wisconsin is looking at building an AI
data center.
Uh-huh. And it uses, I believe, 2,700 megawatts of power. And so just one data farm is using that much. Richland Center peaks at 22 megawatts, just to put it into comparison. WPPI, with 51 members, peak at 1,086 or 1,100. So you think about a data farm of just one unit or one building of how much power that takes for where we're going with technology and our devices. I guess it's really interesting how that's driving the need for power.
What about electric cars? Do they take more?
Well, sure. They use energy. The good part is that we've been able to find is we can kind of push that energy use to off peak. And so that's a really big deal with utilities, is on peak and off peak, because, you know, we have to have all these power plants operational for whenever the peak of the day is. But then at night, you know, the load drops off. Well, we still have those power plants. So the more steady that we can run, the more efficient, the less cost there will be. So the good part about EVs is it's kind of a flexible load. You don't necessarily have to charge during the day. And if we can promote that through our rates, you know, to make it more affordable to charge at night, then, and we've done work and we do have incentives. And it does work. So do they use, you know, are they going to add to the electrification load? Yes. But we think we can kind of guide when they use that, which will just help us. And really, it'll help all the customers, because it can actually, it seems funny, but you can actually save everyone, save the overall cost by getting people to charge when, you know, you need them to.
Like a peak alert then, right? Kind of the same thing.
Right, they're trying to shave the peak or that peak down when they do that peak alert. And for us, it'd be smoothing it out, like Jim said, and you charge or set your charger up, because these cars are, you know, you can turn it on at 11 p.m. till 7, and that level 2 charger in your home will then have you filled up for morning, mm-hmm. and you'll fully be charged. So
everybody has a phone charger now, don't they?
They sure do.
Their iPad and everything else.
Everything, so. Yeah.
Are those pretty safe, like phone chargers? I mean, can they cause some problems, Jim?
Well, they're just really low voltage,
right?
Low current. So yeah, I haven't heard any issues with them.
That they couldn't be faulty then. So.
Yeah.
Well, you have a customer appreciation coming up. Can you tell us about that next week then?
Yeah. So it's Wednesday, next Wednesday. The date fails me. Is it the 9th?
9th. Yep. Yeah.
3:30 to
6:30 at the community center.
Okay.
You know, we'll have boosts like we've had in the past from each department. City departments will be there. We'll be having some drawings, some guessing games for bill credits. You go around to the tables, get a stamp that, you know, you attended, and then you're going to be in for some gift cards too. And we've got a great meal plan for you for customers. So just encourage everybody to come out and see what we've got. So it's been I think it's our fourth annual. It's been very positive and growing every year. So just look forward to seeing our customers and asking any of the staff any questions they have.
I was going to say that's a good opportunity to have everybody right there if you have something that that you'd like to ask about.
Yeah, and it's anywhere, anything within the utilities, right? You've got all the superintendents, all the line staff, the field staff there. So any questions that folks have, they can ask. I know from the electric and water, from our metering side, we are going from AMR, which we collect that data by driving around once a month, to AMI, where all the data will come right back to the office. So within the next few weeks, you'll see the electric crew installing new meters in the community with that AMI technology in it that will be coming back into our office. And someday we won't have to, it started out where we had to used to walk to every house, then we could drive around to every house, and now it'll come back right to the office. So
a lot more efficient for
a
you
a lot more
too.
Efficient, you know, it's going to take with the water, and they've got to get in everybody's house. It's going to take, you know, several years to get it done, but we are kicking that off here hopefully in the next month.
Good. Anything else that you'd like to add today, Jim?
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, we're really trying to make it a fun event, and there'll be many things you can sign up for and do. And Scott failed to mention one of the booths, and that's going to be me manning a booth.
Sorry.
And really, I'm going to be talking about hopefully something that's interesting to people, and that's basically, you know, how to get money, what the sources are. You know, the Inflation Reduction Act dollars are now becoming available, and I'm just going to talk or answer questions about, you know, tax credits and those programs to help, you know, people with their homes as far as energy efficiency.
Because you can get tax credits for new windows and doors and everything.
Yeah, there's a whole list of things, and, you know, a tax credit's a dollar for dollar basically refund off your income tax. So it's really should be a really big boost to help people with their energy efficiency.
Great. Fascinating stuff. Come back and see us again.
Thank you, Phil.
I know you got to get out and about, but we'll let you go. Jim, right. Appreciate it. Jim Schwingel from WPPI Energy, who is the Senior Energy Services Manager. Scott Gall, Manager of the Richland Center Electric Utilities. And he's going to stick with us. We're going to talk about Fire Prevention Week when the morning show continues. Welcome back to the morning show on WRCO Radio. We're going to switch gears, and we're going to talk a little bit about Fire Prevention Week, and some steps that you can take. Chief Scott Gall is in here from the Richland Fire Department, and Darren Steinmetz, who is the captain as well. Good morning, Darren. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Phil. How are you?
Great. Seems like you were just here doing this, that these years roll around pretty
well,
quickly.
Well, it's been a long time. It's been a pretty good run, and I can't remember exactly when I started doing this, but it's been every year for 15, 20 years already, so.
A long, long time.
Yeah.
And in that time, things have changed. Smoke alarms and carbon monoxide detectors, they've all gotten a little better, haven't they?
Yeah, they've all gotten better now that they've gone to the 10-year sealed battery detectors now, so you don't even have to mess with getting a battery change or whatever. So you can get those, and you can't even tear them apart. I mean, you have to, they're just there, and they will give you a sound, end-of-life sound when it's done, and that's when you have to get a new one installed.
So if mine starts beeping every, 30 seconds or so, what's the next step that I should take?
Well, it'll say it right on the detector itself, the end of life, or if it's malfunctioning, or if there's a legit problem. Most of the time, it's like 4 or 5 beeps in every 30 seconds, and so then that gives you an idea that now that I know it's not a battery problem because it's sealed and I can't change the battery anyway, end of life just means, you know, it's hit the 10-year mark and it's good to go. So we're going to need to you basically would just need to install a new one, get that one down, put a new one on. It's the cheapest life insurance you can have. So.
Yes, it is. You still have the program, the smoke detector program, where you go to homes and check it out and install them from time to time?
Yes, we do have that still going. They just need to contact the fire station. They can call the non-emergency number at 647-4556, leave a message on the voicemail, and we'll have someone... A couple people usually go out to the home, and they'll do a little home fire survey with them and take a look at some things if that's okay with them, and just give them some ideas and maybe some tips, and just obviously get them the smoke detectors so they can get those installed.
And that's anyone within your fire district then, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Not just in the city.
No, it's the whole district.
The whole district. And it's a pretty big district too, isn't it?
310 square miles. Go to the county line in at least five directions, and we're the hub. We're in the middle, and so we have such great help with our fire, our mutual aid association groups. They give us a ton of help every year. We try to give it back to them as much as we can. If they call, we'll go, and same for we'll call them. We'll get them coming because they're a lot of good volunteers, and they always want to help out.
It goes both ways. So what other fire departments do you co-op with there for mutual aid?
Oh, we go going around the county at Cazenovia, Yuba, I'm going to forget one of them, Viola, Blue River, Muscadet. We get Lafarge also in the mutual aid. Lone Rock. Yep, I was going to forget one of them.
So. You made your way around the county there.
Yeah.
So, but and have you guys been busy this year, Scott?
Yeah, I think like right about 171 calls. Last year, about 220. So we're definitely on pace, I guess, for the average that we've been seeing lately. Back to the, you know, the chirping of the detectors and that, you know, just call 2106 dispatch. We send two officers out with detectors to make sure that there's no issue, you know, as far as if you have an issue with an alarm, we definitely will come out. So
I can see somebody putting it off and saying, I don't want to bother those guys.
Yep, it is no problem. We've got eight of us as far as officers, and we rotate through and take those calls. So that is no problem for us to come out and check if there's a detector that's malfunctioning. And, you know, the 10-year, it does almost hit to date sometimes when them will start chirping. But recently we've had some that are 2 and 3 years old that are failing. So just because of the date don't mean you might not have an issue. So them are just things that we look for. But if it is going off and if there's any questions, we'll definitely bring a couple meters out and check for them.
Is there a good brand to buy? I mean, they're all price ranges when you're talking about those kind of things, if you're going to go out and buy one.
You know, my suggestion, I guess what we usually leave them as far as if there's a digital display, if you can actually see a number if you're at zero, because the detectors will not go off till 35 parts per million. So if you've got one sitting there and, you know, maybe you have a cracked heat exchanger or something in your furnace and you're only emitting a little bit out into the air and you're at 20 to 25, just be below that threshold. I mean, you could start having headaches. Your pets could start to be sick. And, you know, those are things that we ask if you've been seeing those kind of things. So, yeah, it's a scary thing. And it's definitely a $50, $60 on the better high end to put them in and definitely have as a insurance policy, because you have no idea it's there. And I personally have gone to them for years, and we had it happen in our home with the furnace. So we had headaches and all those kind of things, and it was just below that threshold. So I highly recommend everybody have them in their home.
You were telling me earlier, too, someone charging their batteries in the basement sometimes can tip
off. That can be, you know, one of the sources, or, you know, gas. We always look for hot water heaters, ranges, and if people are charging a battery in their home or in their basement.
Why is Fire Prevention Week an important week, Darren?
Well, just for that fact. I mean, I think not only are you getting the message out to the kids and the schools and everything, but you're also getting the message out to the parents, because hopefully they're going back and talking to their parents about fire different fire prevention tips in the home, having an escape plan to get out of their home, at least two ways out of their home, practice fire drills at home, all the good things, you know, having a meeting place outside. It's all things we're going to talk about over and over and over again. And it's sometimes I think the older kids in the elementary probably get a little tired of it. We try to change it up a little bit, but the biggest thing is just, it's muscle memory, right? So, I mean, the more you can get it out in their head once a year, we only get once a year to get out there and really get their attention. So we'd rather get their attention that way than have to come to their home. So it's always important time for us.
Stay tuned for the second half of today's morning show program on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE. Coming up, though, in just a moment, we'll have a look at today's news.
...by the credit card company. Subject to credit approval, minimum monthly payments required. Terms and conditions apply. See stores for details. A-Plus Furniture and Mattress and Court in Maine.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland Center.
Good morning. The forecast calls for sunshine to partly cloudy and a high of 66 today. Also for tonight, clear and chilly with patchy frost possible, a low of 38 degrees. In Richland Center, our current temperature reading is at 31, and that is so far today's overnight low. Some chillier temperatures in some areas, but right there is where we stand so far at the WRCO studios. An update is sponsored by Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy, your full-service pharmacies caring for you and about you, and by BL Signs.
Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy are working hard to give you great service. The pharmacists and staff want you to feel good and to feel good about your pharmacy. You can trust Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy, where local people who know and care about you are always willing to take the time to answer your questions. Experience the difference, safety, and convenience at Boscobel Pharmacy and the Center Pharmacy on Orange Street in Richland Center.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I am Phil Nee. It was a day over the weekend in which there were a higher than number of emergency calls from Camp Randall Stadium over the weekend of the Badger game. While the team trounced Purdue on a beautiful fall afternoon, paramedics and police were busy in the stands with 43 first aid calls and 26 total ejections from the stadium. There were 9 arrests, 7 for throwing objects as well. 5 people were taken from the stadium by ambulance and 2 were sent to detox from the Badger game on Saturday. It was a big win for Wisconsin over Purdue, as mentioned. Back in Wisconsin over the weekend, former President Donald Trump rallied supporters at the Dodge County Airport in Juneau with another message. He said our country will be over if he loses in November. He urged voters in Wisconsin and the entire Midwest to turn out in record numbers to avoid this miserable fate for America. The Republican presidential candidate called migrants the major threat to the United States, referring to them as horrible people that are destroying the country. He was joined on stage by U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, who said he's spoken with thousands of Wisconsinites, many with tears in their eyes, who want to thank the former president for running. Trump, who spoke for nearly 2 hours, used part of his time to repeat false statements about the federal response to Hurricane Helene, claiming the federal government is not there. President Joe Biden will be back in Wisconsin coming up tomorrow.
Biden is holding a White House event in Milwaukee focused on creating jobs to replace lead pipes. He'll follow that with a trip to the Philadelphia area to campaign for Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey. Biden had delayed his travel due to Hurricane Helene response, the now resolved East Coast longshoremen's strike, and Iran's attack on Israel. Bob Haig, Wisconsin Radio Network.
The search for a new Madison school superintendent cost over $100,000. New superintendent Joe Gothard was hired this year following a nationwide search. The Madison native is nationally recognized for his work as superintendent of St. Paul Public Schools in neighboring Minnesota. But the State Journal reports the district had to spend over $100,000 to find him. Between consultants, travel, and hotels, Gothard will be making just under $300,000 a year to lead the district. The chair of the Federal Trade Commission stopped in Madison to discuss the economy. Lena Khan says the FTC is keeping an eye on what it calls surveillance pricing, where companies may be able to charge each person a different price based on what they know about you. Khan says in food and agriculture, more markets are being controlled by fewer companies. Khan was joined by Democratic U.S. Representative Mark Pocan and a Dane County business owner during the stop. As temperatures start to cool off for good in the area, pest control specialists are sharing tips on how to keep little critters out of your home. With the colder weather, pests like bees, mice, and spiders may start to look for ways into your home as they seek shelter in warmer areas. Specialists say the best way to keep those critters out is to take preventative steps early, like ensuring windows and pipes around the home are sealed. Experts also recommend traps and chemical deterrents if those critters find ways to get inside and keep doing that. Vernon County is seeking three representatives from the county watersheds interested in serving on the Flood Mitigation Alliance Committee. Preference will be given to representatives from active watershed groups. Goals for the Flood Mitigation Alliance include building relationships between landowners, conservation groups, producer-led watershed groups, and county, local, state, and federal partners. Outreach to landowners to encourage best management practices to address rainfall and runoff to increase infiltration. Educate landowners on funding sources available to implement best management practices. Support high-risk areas to mitigate flooding and promote sustainable land use policies and practices that inform state and federal litigation. Also, the committee will report to Vernon County's Land Conservation and Education Committee. Interested residents should send a letter of interest to County Administrator Coordinator Cassandra Heenan at cassandra.hanan@vernoncounty.org or by mail to 400 Courthouse Square, Viroqua at 54665. Letters of interest should be submitted no later than October 9th. Today, Monday Coffee Connect, virtual support to fill your caregiving cup, will be held. And each Monday through October from 10 until 11. Connect with local dementia specialists virtually from the comfort of your home. Join to ask questions, gain support, and brainstorm strategies to get through this time together. Register by calling Pam Kohlberg, dementia care specialist for the ADRC of Eagle Country at 608-548-3954. And a reminder, our Red Cross Blood Drive will be held today from 1 until 6 at the American Legion Clubhouse in Plain. Appointments are appreciated by calling 1-800-RED-CROSS or online at redcrossblood.org.
BL Signs is a full-service sign design company in Richland Center. They specialize in manufacturing all types of interior and exterior signage for all applications to meet the client's needs. They offer internally lighted extruded aluminum sign cabinets, post and panel signs, non-lighted acrylic letters, LED lighted channel letters of all types and sizes, printed in solid color vinyl lettering, and graphics. Call BL Signs at 647-0149 and see what they can do for you. BL Signs, Richland Center.
The forecast for today calls for sunshine to partly cloudy and a high of 66. West winds at 5 to 12 miles per hour. Mostly clear and chilly tonight. Patchy frost possible, a low of 38. Tuesday, nice again with mostly sunny skies, a high of 77. Northwest winds at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wednesday, 72. A high of 75 expected Thursday and Friday, 81. By Saturday, 66 degrees for a high. Right now in Richland Center, after temperatures were mainly in the 60s yesterday across the area, 65 the high here at the studios on the day. Right now, the winds are light and variable, and after an earlier reading this morning in the upper 50s, we're down to 31 degrees.
this Friday night. Don't miss an incredible evening of live music at the Richland Center City Auditorium. The doors open at 6 p.m. The show kicks off at 7. Headlining the night are the Jimmies, an award-winning blues band that's been bringing people together from coast to coast, Europe, Canada, and even the Caribbean since 2010. Opening for the Jimmies is the talented Annie and the Crush, promising an electrifying start to the night. Tickets are just $20 for general seating, so grab yours today before they're gone. The Richland County Performing Arts Council is thrilled to present the Fall Blues Show in this iconic venue. Get ready for a night of unforgettable music, only at the Richland Center City Auditorium this Friday night.
Come for the night.
Sports Time is sponsored by the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. Coming up, a look at the local schedule for tonight, a look back on Sunday football as well.
A Kubota tractor will help you get all those jobs done fast and easy. Hi, I'm Rick from the Homesteader Store. Kubota is known for their high-quality four-wheel drive diesel tractors. They have hydrostatic transmissions, loaders, and three-points. They offer great financing. You can go to our website where you can watch a short video where I go through the different sizes of Kubota tractors to fit your needs. Learn about the full line of Kubota tractors at Southern Wisconsin Tractor Experts, the Homesteader Store.
Today in local football, it will be Riverdale hosting Boscobel in JV football, and Richland Center in JV action will play at River Valley today. The Richland Center varsity soccer team will host Wisconsin Heights. That's a 5 o'clock varsity contest going on at Avitus Rip Field. Eight-player football has Belmont playing at Kickapoo High School against Kickapoo Lafarge. The Royal Ithaca JV game has been postponed. Over the weekend, eight-player football, it was a low-scoring eight-player game. On Saturday, Kickapoo Lafarge defeated Wanigawk Weston by a score of 8-3. Jordan Love threw a pair of second-half touchdowns to tight end Tucker Kraft as the Packers rallied for a 24-19 victory over the Rams Sunday. Kraft had four catches for a career-high 88 yards. Josh Jacobs had 19 carries for 73 yards and scored his first touchdown with the Packers in the first quarter. For the Rams, Kyren Williams ran the ball 22 times for 102 yards and a touchdown. The Packers have beaten the Rams 9 times in their last 10 regular season meetings. The team needed to bounce back after an early deficit. Here is Coach Matt LaFleur.
That's the mindset you have to have, whether it's in football or in life. I mean, there's going to be some things that happen to you and that are out of your control, and the only thing you can control is how you respond to everything. And I think, you know, specifically with Jordan, I think that's one of his superpowers, and we've seen it since the day he got drafted. Is, you know, he just doesn't blink when the pressure comes, and I think last year was pretty indicative of that.
Green Bay is home Sunday to take on Kyler Murray and the Arizona Cardinals. Also, concerning the Packers looking ahead, Romeo Doubs, who was suspended for the over-the-weekend game by the team, should be back.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our conversation tomorrow. So I fully anticipate him coming back, and I'm hopeful that he'll come back and get ready to work. And, you know, like, distractions happen in the National Football League. Distractions happen in life, and you got to do your best to just focus on the task at hand, and I thought our guys did a pretty good job of that.
Elsewhere, yesterday, the Vikings stayed unbeaten with a victory against the Jets, 23-17. Baltimore over Cincinnati, 41-38 in overtime. The Bears beat Carolina, 36-10. Houston, 23. Buffalo, 20. Jacksonville beat Indianapolis, 37-34. Miami over New England, 15-10. Washington, 34. Cleveland, 13. Arizona, 24. And San Francisco, 23. Denver beat Las Vegas, 34-18, the Giants 29, Seattle 20. And last night, Dak Prescott hit Jalen Tolbert with a four-yard touchdown with 20 seconds remaining, and the Dallas Cowboys slipped past the Steelers 20-17 early Monday. The Cowboys won their second straight after Prescott overcame a mistake-filled night to lead a 70-yard drive that ended with Prescott finding a lunging Tolbert just across the goal line on fourth down. The start was delayed nearly 90 minutes due to severe weather and lightning. The game ended at 12:59 a.m. Eastern time, so just before midnight our time, and so they did get it in last night. There was talk of moving it to tonight. Dodger Stadium fans tossed baseballs, apparently at San Diego left fielder Jerickson Profar, and then threw trash that caused a 12-minute wait between pitches during the seventh-inning National League Division Series Game 2. Profar had robbed Mookie Betts of a home run in the first inning, reaching into the stands behind the low left field wall. As Betts rounded the bases, Profar hopped up and down for several seconds back to the plate before showing he caught the ball. With San Diego leading 4-1 and Yu Darvish warming up for the bottom of the seventh, fans appeared to be yelling at the player and a ball was thrown. LeBron James and his son Bronny made NBA history when they played together for the first time during the Lakers preseason game against Phoenix. LeBron and Bronny are the first father and son to play in any NBA game at the same time, let alone on the same team. The James family's remarkable moment coincided with Bronny's 20th birthday. Elsewhere, the 9th-rated Badger women's volleyball team rolled past 25th-rated Washington in three sets Sunday. The Badgers hit 486 on the day. Sarah Franklin had a match-high 12 kills, and Anna Smrek added 10 kills. The Badgers will return to action Friday night, starting at 7, as they welcome Maryland to the UW Fieldhouse. Bobby Portis led the way for the Bucks with 16 off the bench, but Milwaukee fell short in a 120-87 game against the Detroit Pistons, opening up the NBA preseason. That's an update on Monday Morning Sports. I'm Phil Nee.
There are people in this country who work hard every day. Not for fame or fortune do they strive, but the fruits of their labor.
And I think your department has really made an effort to get out in the community and be more public, haven't you?
Yeah, we've actually been doing that more, and we'll talk about that with the changeover from the dance that we used to do and everything. But we have been doing a lot of events to get out and into the public. We want family friendly type events. I think the biggest thing is you get to know the fire department members. The fire department members get to know you, and I think it's very important for young firefighters for sure to get out and to see people that they protect, because they need to learn how to that it's not just going through training, putting water on fire, whatever. It's about protecting people's lives, and you actually get to go and see the people that you're protecting. So I think that's majorly important.
I was talking to somebody the other day. You know, it used to be back in the day, if you ask a little boy especially what they wanted to be, and a lot of times it was, I want to be a fireman, you know? We're not seeing as many young people want to do that, are we?
No, I think we do see them. I just don't. I think there's so many things going on anymore in life that I think it's so many things that they could do. It is probably on the back burner, so to speak, an idea. But I think the biggest thing is that we can get 18-year-olds in the community to see, you know, it's a really good experience to go through and to protect your community in a way where there's great organizations throughout our communities. I think having emergency services, you know, EMS, fire, police, whatever it may be, to get them involved with stuff like that, I think it's so majorly important, because they're, you know, we've been very blessed with the people we've had, but it's hard to get.
You have good numbers, though, don't you, Scott?
Well, and that's the one comment I wanted to bring up to Darren's point there. we all were surprised. We had quite a turnover with 45, 50 years of service of folks that, you know, have retired in the last 3 or 4 years. And we as officers made a decision to go above and beyond, and we changed our bylaws to exceed it. But we were up to 50 members this spring. And when we did the count, there was 25 members that are new in the last 3 years. And of them, we actually changed our bylaws from years ago when it was 21 years old down to 18, because we do have members that just turned 19. So there's quite a group of them that are in that, you know, lower 20s that are partaking in a ton of stuff. And to think about them stepping up, you know, and doing things for their community, it's really neat to see at the department. And, you know, one example was this spring when we did hose testing. With those new young guys, we got hose testing done in one night. And everybody was blown away, and Darren left work early, and we started early. But we were able to knock that out in one day, and that had taken us in years past 3 training nights. And I think that shows, you know, you get those younger guys involved, and it's pretty fun.
You're not doing the dance anymore, but the people in the area got the mailing, I'm sure.
They did get the mailing. That's our one time, you know, that we reach out to support the department. Obviously, costs continue to go up, and all we do is look to improve our safety, right? And that's where those funds go to. It's the fire prevention. It's protecting our members out on the roadways. And probably 65% of the time, that's where our calls are. I think Darren and his 20 years of fire prevention, along with the heating of taking those wood stoves out of the houses, candles, you know, all those kind of things have made the fire part of it a lot less, and just so much more on the roadway.
It's been a little dry here lately, too. Is that a concern for you guys?
Definitely. You know, we've been fortunate there, too. It's still pretty green, but it's pretty dry. I was in the woods the other night, and I nicked a rock and threw sparks, and I was like, that wouldn't probably look good if I started my hillside on fire. But
well, you'd but be right there to
I would be right there.
Help put
yeah,
it out.
I might,
right?
Not sure if I call it in or not.
and they're talking for high winds this weekend, too.
Right.
So, and you mark that with lack of rain for the last week and a half, and you're starting to really see it in the woods starting to dry up real quick. So we're going to have to be really careful with that.
And with the, you know, the harvest season, right, the cornfields and all that, if there's, you know, that bearing or whatever that didn't get greased, you know, we have that, and that we're getting into that time of year too with the bean fields and the cornfields and that. So, and I've seen that on social media that other departments already are having those kind of issues. So
it's truly dry. I drove by somebody in a bean field this last week, and it looked like a fire.
Yeah.
You know, the combine was going through, and it just looked like smoke coming through the air with
yep.
all that dust. So I wanted to talk, too, about a fire extinguisher program. You guys have that as well?
Yeah, we've been, you know, we've got a simulator that we try to do at some of these events that we go to.
Mm-hmm.
We've used it at the schools mm-hmm. as far as stations. And we've helped out different organizations. You know, if the big thing there is if we've got enough staff, because we're all volunteers and not full time, to go out and be able to do that. But we've taken care of some businesses in town and different organizations that needed that training and helped them out. So that's been going good. Just kind of the mindset of, you know, away from the dance, but just more that public out in the community trying to, you know, be part of it more.
What are the fire rates? Have you had to raise those lately for fire calls?
The district has left those fire rates. It's been several years, yeah, for fire. And then what we call duty crew when we go out on accidents. Them have stayed consistent.
Mm-hmm. And you go out a lot on accidents, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's 65, 70% of our calls. You know, it's either, you know, traffic or, you know, removal of the hazards from the road. But, yeah, unfortunately, quite a few accidents we go to.
Mm-hmm. We just unfortunately take it for granted that you guys are always going to be there. We appreciate that. What about to look into the future? Some things, some goals for equipment you're wanting or needing?
I think, you know, we talked about it a year ago. We have the UHP truck in service. It's drove our response time way down because we're responding with two members out the door first to every call. I think overall that's been going very well. The first call that went on, there was a tractor fire probably 13 miles out of town. The UHP truck had that tractor fire contained and out when the engine rolled up. So it really showed us in that case, it was a great tool. And again, it's just a tool, and it's not going to work on a barn fire, and it's not going to work on everything, but you know, it's kind of the mentality behind it. It's quick water, right? Quick response, quick water, start cooling it down before the big trucks get there. I think that's going to play a role going forward with a lot of departments. The cost of trucks and equipment is crazy. We were fortunate to get a new engine 3 years ago, and that truck today is doubled for what we paid.
Doubled.
And we paid $638,000, and the salesman said that's a $1.2 million truck today.
Oh, my goodness.
In 3 years. So I don't, you know, long term, we talk internal of how all the departments can sustain the cost to what these pieces of equipment cost. You know, our gear is only good for 10 years. So our pants and our coats, that's $3,600. A helmet's $500. A particulate hood is $100. It just goes on and on. It's like $5,000 to outfit a member for just 10 years because everything expires at 10 years. So to stay compliant. So it's just how we sustain and the district, you know, and we do our best to stay on that budget, and you know, we're as thrifty as we can. So that's where the support of the community with this mailing helps offset some of the costs that we can't do out of budget. But fortunately, you know, we are able to put money away every year, and you know, that last engine we were able to pay, and we have no debt. So that's a great thing for everybody in the district.
That equipment is so important for you guys, though, Darren. You know, you never know what you're getting into as far as what's in the air when you go into a fire, are you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's one. That's another thing. There's another expense right there is air packs. Air packs are, you know, we've been blessed with getting, you know, grants from getting our air pack grant this last time. I've been two times now.
The last time for sure. The last 30 years, we've been able to get an AFG grant that paid 95% of that. And the last ones were $257,000, and we just had to pay 5%. 15 years before that, we got the same thing. So if we're not fortunate to land that grant, you know, that could take, at that time, when they're due in 10 years, $300,000 just to replace our air packs for our members.
Who writes the grants then?
Oh, we have members in our department that have been writing grants now for a little while, and they're getting really good at, you know, learn from the best. You know, Barry was doing it for years and years when he was on, and, you know, and Steve and Brent, and they all do a great job with the grant writing. And we've been, like I said, been very blessed to get as many grants as we have, because obviously we're offsetting costs that we would have to foot the bill and the district would have to foot the bill otherwise. So we're hoping to continue with that, but it's just a piece of it. So we got to hopefully, you know, with the help of our community, get some donations in.
Yeah, we hope so. National Fire Prevention Week next week, a great time to check your smoke alarms and carbon monoxide detectors on a yearly basis, right?
Absolutely. I know one thing about that too, just touch on smoke detectors real quick and carbon monoxide detectors too. I don't think it's something that we talk about very often, but we probably should, is, you know, how dust gets in the house and it gets, you know, you start seeing some cobwebs in the corner sometime and it just happens. What you really should do a good effort of every month cleaning those smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors off. So definitely the carbon monoxide detectors are sometimes low to the ground, so they can collect a lot of things. Just get them cleaned off so they're not giving you false readings or not working the way they should be.
Every time I cook, I check my fire detectors. So smoke detector.
Oh, you check them really well, I hear.
I do. When I pop popcorn, especially on the stove. So anyway, anything else either one of you would like to add today?
You know, I just thank all the members that we have, right? We've got 48 of them. They give up a lot of time for the community. Everybody's got, you know, full-time careers, families, and everything. And just really appreciate the members stepping up and doing what they do for the community. And just like to thank them because they're always there when we need them. When we ask, you know, like the next couple days, everybody loves the fire trucks, the homecoming parades. And, you know, that takes somebody to come in and volunteer their time to drive that truck. And then tomorrow night and next week at Ithaca. So it's just a real appreciation from me as chief to all of our members of what they do for our community.
Yeah. Well said. Darren, anything else?
On the side of that, you know, schools are coming up. We're going to be doing the schools in the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
Getting out, those people that volunteer their time and get off work and do that, it's amazing. And I can't thank them enough, because it's a chore and a half to try to get enough people to give that education out to these kids. It's something you'll never forget. And I hope they realize that, because it's a really a great time. So I'm glad they're able to do that.
All right. Thanks for what you do, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Captain Darren Simons and Chief Scott Gall of the Richland Fire Department joining us here in studio.
Hello, everyone. Kenny, the wannabe baker, here from Christie's Sunnyside Bakery and Deli. Shop local is the theme at Christie's Sunnyside. Not only do we sell local products, but we use those products in the foods we make and bake for you. So if you like local, check us out on Facebook or give us a call at 649-2253. We are open Wednesday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., Saturday, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Thanks again from Christie's Sunnyside, where every day is sunny.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.